You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week here in studio is Nick Limone.
I'm back, baby.
Fresh off of a big Asia trip. Mm-hmm. To hear a little bit about that in just a second. Justin Davis joins us, of course.
Scoop.
And joining us for a birthday scoop is Mark Medina.
Woo! I'm here, Damon. By the time you guys are watching this, it's not my birthday anymore.
But it is when we're recording this.
It is birthday. At this moment. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nick.
I would do the whole song, but then we get copy struck, yep. And we don't want that to
it's
happen.
True.
So
you'll sing it pitch perfect, and
we'll do
they'll
it in
copyright
spirit.
It.
You can. It's like a spirit bomb. That's fine. Yeah. The entire GameScoop community sends you happy birthday wishes.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Great to have you on the show. We got a great show for you today. We'll talk about this recently unearthed canceled Batman game that was going to be set in the Christopher Nolan universe and was the actual the origin story of the Nemesis system from the Shadow of War games. And also we've got an update on the KOTOR remake, which is apparently alive and well, although I'm not sure that I believe all that. But first, Nick, where'd you go on your big trip through Asia?
Yeah, I went on a big, I like to do one big vacation every year. So I did a like a 2.5 week trip to Singapore, Thailand, and then three different parts of Japan, starting off in Kyoto, Hiroshima, and then winding up in Tokyo. And obviously did all the things, ate all the food. Ate way too much food, but the big thing I got to do, and this is all by chance. I didn't plan this. It all just worked out in my favor. But I happened to be there when they were doing the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth collab at the Square Enix Cafe. So I got to eat and drink a Sephiroth cocktail, a cloud cocktail, and enjoy a Kate Sith bao bun. But apart from that. One of the cool,
like the sound of that.
One of the unique things that kind of caught me off guard a little bit is, you know, obviously I like to do a lot of retro game shopping, look around, poke around all the used game shops, and you know, Akihabara, Super Potato, it's all been pillaged. Prices are crazy now. But one thing that actually caught me a little bit off guard is that's starting to spread all over Japan. And granted, I was in a major city, Hiroshima, but I took a look at one of the smaller retro game shops they have there. But apart from the prices being crazy, a lot of American and European carts, as opposed to, like, I think I saw more American and European carts in Hiroshima than I did actual, like, Japan copies of games, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I wonder why that would be.
I think there's been a heyday of trading.
That's what I was wondering, trading.
Like, pandemic. Yeah. I think that was when, you know, obviously the passion ignited for retro game collecting. And, you know, now that the world's opened up a little more again, I think people mm-hmm. are trading in copies. Those Europeans are trading in their copies of Terranigma for crazy prices. And the Americans are just, hey, I guess I have to buy it.
Yeah. You were traveling with your Steam Deck?
Yes. What were traveled with my Steam Deck. Played a lot of Balatro.
Yes.
A yo, let's Balatro. Go.
I managed to get a win with every single deck on my, my plane ride. And so now I'm in the process of doing the additional challenge modifiers. But apart from
that... It gets so hard.
Oh, dude, it's brutal. It's brutal. And it's just me on the plane at like 1 a.m, just a glass of wine in my hand, just scrawling furiously on my Steam Deck. But apart from that, whenever we were at the hotel and just kind of winding down, I remoted into my PS5 at home on my Steam Deck and played Unicorn Overlord.
Yes.
Which was
there we go.
A great balance
so I'm
to all of it. Mm-hmm.
I'm still playing Unicorn Overlord. I just crossed the 30-hour mark, and I'm nowhere near. I don't even think I'm at the halfway point. So I love it. It's my favorite game of the year. What are your impressions?
Oh, I'm having a blast with it. It's just, it's one of those things where I think a lot of vanillaware games, it's just the visual appeal of them is a thing that is innately just awe-inspiring. So every time I play the game, I'm like, you know, I just got to really get through it. But I just refuse to skip through battle animations. Like, I just love looking at the game unfold, and it's just, it's so pretty. And honestly, right now it feels a little too easy.
It starts out that way.
I'm playing on hardcore, which I expect it to be a little more challenge, or whatever the challenge tactical difficulty is. But I just got to act two or chapter two, because obviously I just did everything I could on the world map. And now I'm starting to get into the gambit system. I don't remember what it's called, but I call it the gambit system because it's Final Fantasy 12, the if X, then Y statement stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where I think I'm having way more fun of like, oh, my thief can poison somebody if I do this. Yeah. They always poison the wrong guy. So let me do this. Let me start micromanaging all my units. And that's where I'm currently at, is micromanaging and min-maxing all my dudes to do what I want, essentially. Yeah.
And I like how you're never locked into a skill, you know, program or whatever it is. Like, in between, before every single fight, you can make adjustments if you want to.
It's just a quality of life thing that feels like it wouldn't have existed 10 years ago. They're just like, no, this should be convenient and easy to use.
And look how good this food looks. It's like Final Fantasy 15 levels of good-looking food.
The year of good-looking video game food. We got Dragon's Dogma 2, which is just real food. We got this.
Yeah.
I love it.
Mark, it's been a minute since you've been on the show. What have you been playing?
Yeah. I also played a ton of Balatro. That game was one of those, everyone's like, you're going to get addicted to it. And I was like, all right, we'll see. I tried the hour demo on PS5, and I was like, okay, I'm in. I bought it on Switch because I was like, I don't want to be tied to my TV. That was like Saturday morning. Next thing you know, it's Sunday night, and this is all I've done. I didn't watch any TV, nothing. I just played that game on Switch. It's great. More recently, I played the Stellar Blade demo. I think Stellar Blade is going to be great. I thought it was really fun.
Okay, let's talk about that. Because I played the Stellar Blade demo too, and I wanted to like it more than I did, but it may be that I'm just terrible at those kinds of games. Because I mean, just in the demo, early part of the game, I was really struggling with the combat.
Yeah, on the surface, it looks like a character action, like Platinum Games, Bayonetta / Nier, and those are like, I understand the comparisons when you look at like Eve's character, but it's way more like Souls-like, Lies of P. You can play it on easy, and it's very easy if you play it on easy, but I played on easy to like my second time playing through the demo because I wanted to see if it was dramatically easier, and then you find out that the Dark Souls combat is fun because it's hard. Dark Souls combat, when it's easy, not that fun. So, it's something you got to be up for the challenge for. I ended up liking it a lot. Yeah. That was it.
You played it?
Yeah, I played it as well. Honestly, I did not expect it to be a Souls-like. I think like a lot of people, I expected it to be kind of a third-person action platformer type, a la Nier Automata. Which is one of my favorite games of all time. But I was really taken aback. I really enjoyed the combat. And even though it's not quite a Platinum game style, you know, Team Ninja style action game, I think where it differs from Dark Souls combat is there's a lot of animation canceling and things like that with a lot of the abilities of the main character. And that's where I think you can start to get real fancy It reminds me very immediately of something like Final Fantasy 16's combat system, but in, you know, squeezed into a Dark Souls style, yeah, like mold to some extent. And I hate describing games with other games, but that is innately, sure, the thing that is like the most glaring with this thing. Mm. Also, I really like the exploration in the game. Mm. I like that there's, mm-hmm, a lot of optional things for you to find if you want. Yeah. You get cool power-ups, there's little puzzles, little audio diaries and things like that. So all in all, I had a good time.
Yeah, it's totally the type of game where I'm going to be looking around every single corner, mm-hmm, for hidden chests, mm-hmm, or, you know, or whatever's over there.
Yeah, I played the demo a couple times, and I watched a, like, 100% of the demo, and yeah, there were so many areas that I missed. I was like, oh, I didn't, like, you jump in the water at one part. You don't even have to do that. You can just go around. There's a chest up there, and you're just like, what? But there's also a chest in the water, so you have to backtrack. Also, I don't know if you misspoke, but I would actually say this game is very Team Ninja, because it's way more based off, like, parrying and doing perfect parryings than Dark Souls. Dark Souls is like my way of like kind of explaining the like more brutal difficulty, but it does remind me a lot of like Wolong quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's where it excels. Like it is, sure, Dark Souls, you know, strong attack, have light attack, dodging, parrying, and whatnot. Yeah. But the animation, mm-hmm, canceling, like the ability to cancel out of animations and prioritize other animations, and, you know, stun locking an enemy when they're attacking and things like that. Like, that's the stuff that is Team Ninja. That is the Platinum, yeah, Games, yep, like action. Am I paying attention? Great. You'll be, mm-hmm, rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The combat is all based on parrying and dodging. And I was just having a really hard time reading the enemy's tells of, like, figure out the right time to parry and whatnot, but it's a me problem.
I am curious though, like I only played through the demo once, just from beginning to end, and then I saw like that little sizzle trailer that they play at the end of it,
yeah,
that kind of teases, yeah, at other things that you can do in the game, and like I wasn't expecting to see like the gun combat that's in the game, and, yeah, that looks pretty wildly different from what you experience in the demo. I know you get a gun in the boss trial thing that you unlock afterwards, but it just, yeah, looks like there's a lot of game, mm-hmm, in this game.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of costumes, a lot of areas. But besides Stellar Blade, I'm slowly still working my way through Dragon's Dogma. That game, mm-hmm, is very long,
me,
and it's kind of hard. But I like it a lot. And then, but more recently, I've been playing Content Warning. That game's great. It's just kind of like a Lethal Company style. Play with your friends. There's no winning. You just play until you fail. But you
what?
Just it's
I need
it's
this
Lethal Company.
I don't. So I don't also don't know Lethal Company.
Okay, it's Lethal Company, but you play as Jake Paul. But basically, what it is like. Do you want me to explain Lethal Company or Content Warning? Basically, for Content Warning, you are trying to film things that are happening, right? So this is like the intro area. You dive down, and then there's like monsters down here. The whole point of it is to film the monsters. You can switch to this like first person influencer mode. And the whole thing is you're just like getting all these like crazy shots. People are doing emotes in front of the monsters, and you're not fighting them. You're not doing anything else. You're just trying to get. You're just trying to go viral. So then you take.
So it's Pokemon
the
Snap?
sort of, yeah, I guess, yeah. So then you do all this stuff.
Snap.
You film monsters. You do all this stuff. The whole the most important part is not to get everyone to survive. It's just to get the camera back up to the surface. Because then what you do, it edits a video, and the game makes a little sizzle reel. And they're hilarious.
Oh, cool.
They're so funny because it takes all the best parts. And it's because it goes off like your proximity chat and just the things you've done. Mm. And it just takes all the best parts and makes these really funny videos that you can then save. And so then depending on how good the video is, you get views. And you have 3 days to get a certain amount of views. And then the next round, you get more and more and more. And then you eventually fail.
They did a really clever thing with Content Warning, where the game was free. It came out and was just free. Anyone could download it free to keep forever on Steam, and you know, and it blew up. And what I think 4 or 5 like millions of people downloaded it, and now it's not free. So like it's reached this critical mass of Twitch streamers and YouTubers and other people, and you know, and real influencers like talking about it. And now the game is a paid download. So like an interesting sort of launch free strategy from them.
Yeah, it's done something weird with their reviews too, and people are trying to like figure out what it is. Because like a lot of the game is like overwhelmingly positive on Steam. Mm-hmm. Well, that's usually going to happen when the game is completely free. So it's like right out of the gate, they had to decide we're going to lose. I mean, I think they hit like 6 million on day one. We're going to lose $6 million sales that they wouldn't have gotten if the game was paid. Let's be honest. Get all of this free publicity, all of this free, like getting shot up on the Steam charts, all these positive reviews. And now it's like, and they're only asking $7 for the game.
Wow.
It's a weird strategy, but it's made by the people who make like Totally Accurate Battle Simulator.
So I like that game. Okay.
Yeah, I expect it to be really like stupid and control weird and stuff, but it's good, it's fun.
Cool visual style to it. Like even like it's not horror, but the horror stuff looks cool.
There's an element of like, and this sounds like a pejorative. It sounds like it's being negative, but I don't mean it that way. Of like, you know, flavor of the week, flavor of the day, like these games that are kind of flashes in the pan that come and go. But like, but I feel like Content Warning is a little bit more like it's only $8. You know, it was free to start. Like, it's not trying to be like, you know, play this game for the rest of your life, and this is the game that people are going to play forever. Like, it feels like it tried and successfully positioned itself as like, you know, this is the game everyone on Twitch is going to care about for a week, and then on to the next one. And you know, they'll make the money that they make, right? And like, I don't know, I kind of respect that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm living in that world right now where like I've been playing with work friends, I've been playing with just other friends, and it's like I can see myself. This is a stupid little gag we made in this. earn this. That's what happens when you lose your camera. We go crazy on the guide team. Anyways, and I could totally see myself. I have a lot of people that are like, I want to play this weekend. Let's figure it out. And I can see like Sunday being the last time I ever play this game. Because it's like, it is kind of just you're starting over and over. And so it's like, I want to play with this person. I want to play with that person. But once it's done, that's it. I'll probably never play it again. But that's kind of what these games are.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a little bit of a pet peeve with a lot of the reporting. I don't know if IGN did this reporting. Maybe I should have checked. Of like, you know, like Power World has lost 97% of its player base. Yeah. And like, what a weird way to characterize it and phrase it. Like, nobody, like, there's no like, you know, Netflix's One Piece has lost 97% of its viewership.
Right.
It's like, no, like, I'm just done with the game now. And that is fine. Like, I don't like, not every game needs to have endless content in it. And you know, and obviously in the case of Power World or any of these games, like, you know, audiences will come back when there's new updates. Like, that's, you know, it's not the characterizing it as like an unhealthy thing that like it's okay for something to have a shelf life is you know, I'm glad to see, you know, maybe people are kind of coming back around to that viewpoint.
Well, traditionally all games had a shelf life, but you know, in recent years, I think publishers and their investors do not want their games to have a shelf life. Well, they do want people.
And I remember the very first time I can remember coming across this is people on the Destiny subreddit. This is like 6 or 7 years ago, Destiny 1, where like they were furious and angry. They're like, there's nothing for me to do. Like, I've completed all the content. Like, there's your content's coming out too slowly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, it's like, don't play the game. Like, go play something else. Like,
there's nothing else to play.
But just like the beast being your player base has to be fed nonstop, right? Or like, people were upset. I have another example, then I'll stop ranting. But the Minecraft has been criticized for its updates recently being kind of thin and small and like not super extensive. And then their April Fool's Day joke was this huge new crazy thing in Minecraft that was way bigger and more extensive than what the actual updates to Minecraft have been lately. But like the response to that is like, the reason Minecraft's getting small updates is because the game is finished. The game's done. Like Minecraft is a complete full experience, and it doesn't matter if they add turtles to it or whatever. Like, you don't need to, it's fine. Like, not everything needs to be expanded till the end of time.
I never thought of Minecraft as like a live service game. So it'd be kind of weird that people would complain about that, I guess.
I mean, it is, right? This middle ground of like, just be happy when like, hey, you know, we're adding turtles and now there's turtles in Minecraft. But like, it doesn't need to be like, you know, every other month. Yeah. It doesn't need to be this every other month till the end of time thing.
I 100% agree. And I think it's a, you know, just to go back to Minecraft, I think we've kind of been conditioned though to expect incremental updates because the state of like early access games, right? When I bought Minecraft back in 2009, you know, it looked nothing like it does today. And, you know, I was chomping at the bit to see what update 0.98 would introduce and things like that. So
yeah, me too.
I think we've all, like all consumers have opted in with things like Steam Early Access and back in the day, Steam Greenlight and all this stuff. And we kind of expect things to continue to receive support, even though, you know, like a lot of games, you just kind of finish them and that's it. That's okay. You're allowed to do that and move on. But there's just something about it in our biology, I think, in our psychology that has us want. Like,
I do.
We spent money on it. We need more.
I do like. I don't even know what point I'm making anymore.
I was going to say. Content warning's pretty fun.
That's podcast.
It's an observation, though, right? Like, this is a phenomenon that we are observing. It's not good, bad, or whatever. It's just something that's happened.
Well, it's actually related to one of the other topics that I was going to bring up. So actually, let's jump ahead to this. We're going to leapfrog over a couple other things. There's a new study from Newzoo was just released and covered by Kotaku. Basically, in 2023, the lion's share of gaming was done on older games, 6 years old or more. Gamers mostly played older games like GTA 5 and Fortnite in 2023. Yeah. 60% of all playtime was spent on games released 6 years ago or more. And they broke it down by platform. So, like, on PC, out of the top 10 games, you know, with the most monthly active users all year round, not a single one of the top 10 was released in 2023. It's like, this is a very small font. Fortnite, Roblox, Minecraft, Counter-Strike, The Sims 4, League of Legends, Valorant, Grand Theft Auto 5, Rocket League. On PlayStation, the only new game was EA Sports FC 24, their football game.
Just because that's the new FIFA, right?
Yeah, and then it's all the same old stuff. On Xbox, the only new game was Starfield, but it was kind of far down the list. Again, Fortnite, Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto 5. But then on the Switch, it's interesting. Fortnite was number one on Switch, but then it's Tears of the Kingdom and Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Wow.
So that's actually
pretty nutty. I take a little bit of issue with this.
Okay.
I think it's slightly misleading because it's completely irrelevant what year Fortnite came out, because the Fortnite people are playing now is a different game, and they're playing it because it's new experiences and new things to do. And so I kind of put, like, you know, fair enough, right? Like, Fortnite is a years old game technically when people are still playing it. But to me, I sort these games into a couple buckets of, like, games that have the ongoing support of, like, we were talking about before, and there's new stuff coming out in them, versus, like, something like Counter-Strike is like, no, that's just a game. And I know that Counter-Strike's getting small updates too, but, like, you know, that's just a game that just has that much staying power and sticking power. You know, Rocket League would be in that category too.
Rocket League is
whereas
nuts.
Like Fortnite, it doesn't, like, Fortnite could be, you know, 1 year old, 10 years old. Like, people are in it today because it's because of the different experiences that it introduces.
Not to be completely reductionist about it, but I feel like if a developer is like, should we make our game a game as a service? And then they look at this list and they're like, is our game one of these? We probably shouldn't.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's true.
That's the problem. They want their game to be one of these. So then they see this chart and they go, well, you know, Suicide Squad has to be a game that lives forever. And it's got like 1,000 players.
But look at something like Grand Theft Auto 5, though, right? That game has no support, and yet it is still, like, I think probably
They're playing GTA Online. It's got a ton of support.
That's not the base game. Online updates. True.
It's kind of like the tribalization. You know, it's like how many people that are in their 30s or 40s get into being a the passive participant, like a viewer of a new sport, like. You know, I've never watched soccer in my life and I'm going to start. It's like that feels like sort of this calcification of, like, you know, like no one ever switches deodorant brands. Like, no one ever gets into new. It's the same music. It's the same stuff. And, like, video games are kind of moving that direction, I think. You know, I'm into Fortnite and Call of Duty and that's just my thing. And I'm not interested in picking up anything new.
I also want to point out, anytime you see a study like this, they just do like a blanket. They don't distinguish between different types of gamers. So this is just all gamers. And you do need to make a distinction. Your traditional hardcore gamer, like us, we play a lot of games. We like to keep up with the latest games. We go to sites like IGN to read about games. We like to talk about games, consider gaming to be part of our identity. We have a huge backlog of games. That's like the traditional hardcore gamer. But today, there's also a very hardcore gamer that just plays one game. Like Justin was just saying, like those Destiny players, like They just wanted more Destiny to play, and they're super hardcore about it, but they don't play a lot of other games. Mm-hmm. That's just a different type of gamer than today. I think if you did this study with just the IGN audience or the GameScoop audience, it'd be very different.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I mean, it's the attention economy, right? Yeah. Like, we've talked a lot on Scoop about a console generation, like, they kind of suck. That's why they suck from a business standpoint, because you spent all this time and effort and money to get a customer, and then every console generation is an opportunity for them to switch, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, each individual video game is kind of that, but on, like, a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. It's like if you bought a game and you're into it and you played it for dozens of hours, developers have learned out of, you know, necessity in some cases that, like, they just have to do everything they can to hold on to them for as long as they possibly can, and figure out ways to sell them updates, which, you know, I get. I understand.
So the rest of the data here is that only 8% of total playtime in 2023 was for new releases, just 8%. And of those, Diablo 4 was the most played game, but it was still only 1.4% of 2023's total playtime. That's Diablo 4. That's followed by Hogwarts Legacy at 0.8%, Baldur's Gate 3 at 0.6%, and then Starfield was at 0.3%.
Wow. That's pretty nuts. All right.
Of course, one upcoming game that could upset this trend of new releases only claiming a small percentage of overall playtime could be Grand Theft Auto 6.
100%. If you look at this list 10 years from now, Grand Theft Auto 6 will replace GTA 5. And honestly, GTA 5 will probably just move a little bit lower on this list.
Yeah, they'll both be on there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always people that are going to stick with that, like, original GTA Online. But yeah, if they're doing GTA Online for GTA 6... That'll just take over for sure. And I can't wait for that.
I mean, there's definitely these parallel universes of gaming of, like, you know, League of Legends to this day is one of the biggest video games on the planet. You know, millions of people and billions of dollars. And it's completely invisible to anyone that doesn't play and doesn't care about League of Legends. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. And the same is true on the extreme opposite end of the spectrum. True, I read some headline. I just looked it up that the mobile game, you know, Monopoly Go, has spent hundreds of millions of dollars just in advertising. $500 million advertising the game, and it's grossed like $2 billion now.
Yeah. Monopoly Go is no joke. Has come up in like my cursory readings. I was like, wow, this is like a big deal. And then I move on.
Like that's an example of, like, you know, whatever, like Candy Crush Saga, like take your pick, right? Mm-hmm. But there's this other extreme, you know, there's just these parallel universes of video games where it means something completely different than it means to everyone listening to this show.
A different hardcore gamer, though.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife's parents started playing World of Warcraft in 2004. And that is all they play. They don't play any other video game.
I love that.
They play WoW every day. And they've not even considered ever playing anything else. Because it's just like,
cool.
This is where we live. I think they dipped into like Guild Wars 2 once for like a week. And they're like, nah, back to WoW. Yeah, it's funny because working on like the guides team, you know, all of us working at IGN, it's always been a strange thing. Because it's like a lot of those games are so big and yet they're so like, they're so hard to cover. Because it's like, those are, each of those games is like a team's full-time jobs. Like, we've thought about it a lot. Like, how do we start covering something like Final Fantasy 14? And it's like, hire a whole team, and that is just their job, is to do that. It's so tough. But games like that, that's what they do to hook people. I played Fortnite like 3 months ago, and then I played it like a week ago, and it just completely different game. It's like, you could get Hades' chains and like... all this like weird like Greek mythology stuff, and I was like, what? I don't even know this game is. It's 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago, it was like space stuff and Mr. Beast was in the game, and now it's like I'm fighting Zeus. Like, what happened? It's a weird game.
Let's get back to this Batman game. So gameplay and images for this canceled Nolanverse Batman game have been unearthed. This was in development at Monolith Productions. But then at some point it was switched to become the Lord of the Rings game, Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor, which was released in 2014. So yeah, it would have been weird. At that time, the Batman Arkham series would have been two or three entries deep. It would be either on like Arkham City or Origins. So it does it does seem a little strange that Warner Brothers would want two separate Batman games at the same time. So that's why they changed one into Lord of the Rings, which is also kind of random and weird. But I guess like I guess I can kind of see what they were thinking at the time. You know, like, our Batman Arkham games are very successful, but we also have these Christopher Nolan films that are very successful. What can we do about that?
I didn't get a chance to read in on this one. Is this supposed to be a sequel to their a Batman Begins game? Because there was a movie tie-in Batman Begins game that came out in line with the movie. So is this supposed to be Dark Knight or?
Well, I think it would have been. It would have been Dark Knight because it was before Dark Knight Rises. But as you can see, you know, it's the gameplay wise and the look of it is not that dissimilar from Arkham Asylum. It would have been hard to market these games, right?
When was this, Damon, maybe you already said this, sorry. What year was this supposedly being worked on?
It would have been like early 2010s because Shadow of Mordor came out in 2014. And like maybe in 2010 is when this
Dark Knight was
started.
What, 2007 or 2009 or something like that?
So they, because Monolith bought them before, or excuse me, Warner Brothers, which owns DC Comics, bought Monolith, I don't remember exactly when, but earlier than that, like in the mid-2000s. Yeah. You know, so it was an in-house studio, I guess, is only the only point I'm making. They're trying to figure out somebody to get on to be on a Batman project.
Yeah. Hmm. But the really interesting thing is that this game had the Nemesis system that was made famous in Shadow of Mordor. So it's like, it's just weird. Like, how did we not know this before? I've interviewed the developers of both Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War, like sat down with them for interviews, like, never once mentioned that, we made that Nemesis system for a Batman game.
It's
That's because someone in their media training was like, we will kill you if you mention a Batman game.
We will.
And you know what? A Batman game makes, you know, the Nemesis system makes sense in a Batman game. Yeah. Honestly, the Nemesis system makes sense for most games. So it's just like, I would love to see it pop up in other things. Like,
especially in Batman, where Batman doesn't kill. He just beats guys up, leaves them alive, leaves them with a grudge against them. Like, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
And there was nothing really happening with the Lord of the Rings IP at this time, apart from, like, 2009. Because, all the PS2 action games had already come out. There's an MMO, I think.
There are the RTS games, the Battle for Middle-Earth 1 and 2.
And that was an Xbox 360. Battle for Middle-Earth 2 was on 360, so... About the same time as this, so maybe they're just like, we need an action game set in the Lord of the Rings.
Maybe they did. Yeah, well, because Shadow of Mordor and the sequel, Shadow of War, like, are very beloved games. Maybe they did some, like, screen testing, and people are having the same conversation we're having now, which is like, are these different than the Arkham games that Rocksteady's making? They're like, you know what? Let's not saturate the market, and let's switch this to Lord of the Rings. I don't know where the Lord of the Rings came from, but like, let's do that. And it worked because like, think about the world we live in now, right? Now we have two kind of Batman games, right? We have Suicide Squad and Arkham Knights, and people are kind of confused as to like what Batman is what in which of these games and like who is... Suicide Squad is based off the Arkham games, but like
what's
Arkham
the continuity?
Knights, not really. Yeah, it's kind of very like strange.
It also makes the whole Suicide Squad situation like sting even more because now you think, well, wait a minute. So Rocksteady could have just done another Arkham game and include the Nemesis system.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers has patented.
This game's just basically Insomniac Spider-Man with the puzzles and the skill trees and whatnot. I mean, honestly, it does look a lot like an Insomniac Spider-Man game, reductionist again, but still.
It does, but like the camera angle looks exactly like the Arkham games. So like, if you told me this is Arkham Origins prototype footage, I would just be like, yep. That makes sense because it does look a lot like it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just
Looks really far along. Like that's what sort of surprised me is like, it does not look like, a tech demo or whatever. I mean, what do I know? I never made a video game, but like, it feels like something that like is relatively farther along than like when I read the headline before I watched the footage, I'm like, this is a whole video game.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because one of the top comments on our article said, it really highlights the dysfunction of the gaming industry that a project made it this far and was sunk.
Yeah,
that's nuts. That's years of people's lives.
It's like you would expect these to be like white blocks and stuff, but it's like the UI, you know, like the buildings and stuff. But it's like the UI looks done. Like this, I mean, this looks good.
I mean, right?
He's also rocking
it doesn't look bad at all, especially for like pre-alpha footage from over a decade ago. Like, I think it looks great.
I like this version of Batman they've got going on with the short ears. He's always got the long ears nowadays, but this one's cool. Maybe they'll bring it back for a Robert Pattinson Batman game.
Yeah, they didn't. No game tie into that one. So Monolith changed this to Shadow of War. Then they did Shadow of Mordor. Today they are supposedly working on Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Supposedly. Yeah. Although that was announced in 2021.
Monolith made a game called Gotham City Impostors, which was a first person.
It was an Xbox Live Arcade game.
Team shooter.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the weird gadgets. You never play as the Joker or Batman. You just play as gangs that are inspired by them. So, like, you play as the clowns, and they have, like, roller skate shoes and stuff like that. Wow. It was nuts.
Just like the Joker does.
I had completely forgotten about that game. We gave it a 7. We thought it was good.
Yeah, I remember it being pretty competent. And, like,
I've never played it.
Fine. It'd be very funny if the Wonder Woman game comes out. It's like, well, it's actually set in Gotham City, and it's just all of the assets from this game repurposed for Wonder Woman.
I do. I always think about that anecdote of like, so when the Wii came out and Miis, you know, you can make your own Mii, and it's like Nintendo had been sitting on that technology for like something like 20 years. They'd had like, you know, make cartoony avatars of yourself, and like, I do think a lot of these, like, you know, we're looking at this footage and we're like, oh, it's a shame this game never came out. But I suspect that a lot of these scenarios and mini games, or maybe even code, like, it does make its way back into modern projects. Like, I think that stuff gets picked up and dusted off more than we might realize.
Yeah.
It's very stylized. Like, looks good. Whether it's pre-alpha or whatnot, like, there's a very clear attention to detail with trying to recreate comic book style panels with that, like, you know, hugging the wall and looking over the corner. Batman, like, stylized in the shadows and the villain in the light. It's cool.
It really makes you feel like Batman.
It does indeed. Well, speaking of games that had some trouble development and may not ever come out, The CEO of Saber Interactive says the KOTOR remake, Knights of the Old Republic, he says it's alive and well, Nick. So, everything's fine with that game.
We got nothing to worry about.
I would like to speak to the KOTOR remake if you could put it on the phone, please, because I don't know.
So,
is he alive and well in the room with us right now?
Exactly.
Just as a recap, this little 20-second teaser that we're seeing here is the only proof that this game exists that we've ever seen. The only media that's ever been released, there's nothing else, which is just a little, a lightsaber ignition and then the logo. That was in 2021, so nothing since then. It was in development at Aspyr. We know they showed a vertical slice to Sony, and Sony was not impressed. Development was paused indefinitely, then it was moved over to Saber Interactive, but we haven't gotten any updates from them. And then recently Saber left Embracer, and they mentioned by name a couple of their properties and games they were taking with them, but they didn't mention KOTOR. So now in this new interview, I believe this interview is in with IGN, Saber Interactive's CEO says, "It's clear and it's obvious that we're working on this."
How is it obvious?
That makes me very convinced that this project is still alive. It's like, no, don't worry, it's not dead. It's very much alive. It's like, well, I wasn't questioning that until you talked about it being potentially dead.
It's like a Weekend at Bernie's situation. Yeah, like, guys, it's totally fine.
I'm a little shocked, Mark, that you know Weekend at Bernie's, considering how many movies you've not seen.
Pulled that one out of nowhere. Great movie. Great movies.
I don't know about the sequel. I don't even know about the first one, actually.
I don't remember them very well, but I remember it's about a guy who's dead and they're trying to pretend that he's not.
Yep.
For a whole weekend. There it is with the B-roll. Jobert doesn't miss, man.
He doesn't miss. Jobert is quick draw on the B-roll.
What is this, a 4K HDR?
I know. This looks great. This is the best looking footage of Weekend at Bernie's I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, man. On Thursday nights, I like to watch a movie. It just so happens my wife is out of town on a work trip. I'm going to watch Weekend at Bernie's tonight.
I was thinking the same thing. I might watch this again.
And there he is. That's Knights of the Old Republic remake right there. He's alive and well.
Where can I stream?
The titular Bernie.
Weekend at Bernie's and My Cousin Vinny are the two that are so good.
Well, My Cousin Vinny is actually a good movie.
So was Weekend at Bernie's.
I screw this podcast up every time I'm on here.
Weekend at Bernie's streaming.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. I may have to rent it for $5.
We gotta have a DVD copy of building something.
We do. We have a big DVD collection here in the office. Maybe we have Weekend at Bernie's. I'm going to check.
Just watch it on YouTube. It's clearly in great quality.
It's actually really good.
I mean, this is gorgeous.
That's the girl from Pulp Fiction.
That's the best thing to do when you watch these old movies is you're like, what? It's got Walter White in it? I didn't know that.
Okay. Where were we? Oh, yeah. The KOTOR remake.
I think
you got to take Weekend at Bernie's off. It's too distracting. I cannot focus on this podcast. The CEO.
So I'm not going to. Oh, go ahead.
CEO of Saber Interactive says, what I will say is that the game is alive and well, KOTOR, and we're dedicated to making sure we exceed consumer expectations. How difficult is that going to be at this point? Because KOTOR is a big RPG. It's not like Dead Space, very focused horror experience. No. Big sprawling RPG where you go to different planets, lots of characters, lots of voiceover, lots of, you know, a very extensive combat system. It's got to be on the level of like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Well, and yeah. I was going to say, like, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody, but this game is, I don't know if it's literally the first RPG to do it, but, like, Mass Effect style, like, wildly diverging story paths and, like, incredibly different endings where it's not like, oh, the same ending, but, like, no, it's completely, completely different. And so, like, that just, you know, you could get away with that when, like, assets were lower res and there was less voice acting and stuff like that now, but, like, to really, like, if they're doing a full remake style remake, like, that just feels like very hard to pull off in a modern context.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Especially if, like Damon said, I do think that this has been hyped up to the point now that it feels like it almost necessitates a rebirth style reimagining of the original game. And, you know, just given all the permutations of different choices, outcomes and whatnot, that just seems like a lot of money and time, and I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at list of games that Saber has developed. There's like nothing on the level of something.
Doesn't
like this.
Saber do like Crysis or something? Didn't they work on Crysis, the Crysis remastered games? The name just stands out to me.
Justin, they did the video version of Gloomhaven.
Oh, wow.
Okay, that's really good. I mean, I will say I don't necessarily think that KOTOR needs like a Final Fantasy VII remake style full on remake. I think it's fine to just whatever. We talked about it so much on the show, like the mix between HD remaster and remake and everything in between. Like, you know, KOTOR being a slightly more old school choice driven Star Wars RPG. It's like I think they can get away with sort of like it doesn't need to be this quadruple A thing. It'll still be one of the greatest of all time. But like, I don't know that matches players' expectations anymore.
Yeah, there's not a lot of memorable games on their list of games developed. The top comment on this article says, like Hollow Knight Silksong and Metroid Prime 4, I'll believe it when I see it.
Didn't Hollow Knight Silksong actually get like an Xbox store post or something?
They got a Korean rating, which is like the 13th time I've heard this means it's soon.
Like, that is an actual sign of life to me, as opposed to
Nick.
Team Cherry, I'm like, no. Like, this game is still very much alive. It's just in the other room.
Yeah, I have a girlfriend. She goes to another school.
She lives in Canada.
She's.
I do think the gaming industry has a bad habit of announcing games too early.
Too early, huh?
We're talking about Wonder Woman, Perfect Dark, Wolverine, Beyond Good and Evil 2, Fable, Elder Scrolls 6. It's just like,
well, I mean, speaking of Wonder Woman, like, you know, Shadow of War from Monolith came out in 2017.
I know.
I know I've made this rant on Scoop many times, but like, I just feel like it's impossible to make video games anymore. It's like a studio of hundreds of people released their last game 7 years ago, and I don't even think Wonder Woman is imminent. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm pretty worried about it.
There's like nothing, there's no other media or industry that's like this where like you announce something and then you have to wait seven or more years for the product. It's like, that studio hasn't released anything since Shadow of War, right? So what money's coming in?
Exactly.
How are they paying all their developers?
Hence the layoffs. I mean, like, it's so, like, the gaming industry is like, you know, there's this reckoning of like, you know, and I don't want to give air cover to the layoffs. It's like, please plan out your budget so that you don't have to do this. But like, it's just, it's starting to feel dire.
Mm-hmm. It's like sustainability very soon, and it's gonna pop that bubble, and I'm scared.
What's funny is that E3 is like not that distant of a memory now, but by the time Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, it definitely will be. Like, there will be a lot of people that barely remember E3, but that game will have been announced at E3,
and 2018.
Like, it's weird to think about. Like, it'll be like first shown at E3, and like, I mean, think about it. That game's not going to come out until 2029, probably. Like, they're still working on Starfield DLC. Like, that game is pretty far out.
Yeah.
Well, like, if Bethesda doesn't let someone else make a Fallout game, you know, it's like Fallout 76 was 2018, you know, and so we're years away from Elder Scrolls. It's like, what, 15 years between Fallout games?
Yeah. Well, and Todd Howard's already said, we're going to, after Elder Scrolls, we'll start work on Fallout 5. And you're like,
you know what?
Excited for 2035.
I'm talking about video games so
like,
far.
So excited for 2035. Like,
I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't like it.
I don't like it either, Justin.
Okay.
Yeah.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Let's move on. Are any of you Roku users?
No. My parents are. I got them a Roku TV.
Mm. Yeah, I don't personally use Roku or any of that. But, however, Roku is apparently thinking about trying to push ads to your TV whenever you go idle. Did you see this today?
Yes.
A new patent reveals it is looking to display ads on its TVs to consumers when the devices are idle, specifically for third-party devices connected to its TVs via HDMI, like game consoles and streaming sticks. For example, if you're playing a game on your PS5 or watching a show or movie on your Apple TV, you want to pause for whatever reason, whether a bathroom break or to get a snack, the TV would then put up an ad while the game paused or whatever.
It's like they want to do what Netflix does, right? Like when Netflix is idle, it'll dip to the black screen and it'll start showing things on Netflix. Mm-hmm. That's fine because you're idle on Netflix. That kind of makes sense for them to be like, here are some other things you can watch, blah, blah, blah. And it becomes this guessing game where they show the thing before that shows the title and me and Amanda try to guess what the thing is before they show the title. Anyways, but this is like super weird because it's like you're going to pause your Roku and then it's going to just be like men's razors, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It's going to be horrible. And then we are a half step away from a Black Mirror episode of like, no, now you have to watch this before you can unpause.
Yeah.
That's what's next.
These ads have been bio-targeted to your interest.
Yeah.
Only you see 100%. This ad. The person sitting on the couch with you sees a completely different ad.
Yes.
Like, it's just, it's so nefarious. It's one of those things where like, at the baseline level, is it really that big of a deal if I pause a thing and a commercial, a pop-up pops up? No, but it's a gateway drug to something far more sinister, and it's not healthy. I'm not gonna try and be an old man about it, but we should not be inundated with advertisements like this. It is not healthy for us.
And you work in branded.
And I work in branded content. I mean, this is not healthy. It is not healthy, but this is just one step further that we're given to the machine.
Well, also, what if you're like watching like a subscription service that doesn't include ads that you pay for, like Max,
right,
or Disney Plus?
Yeah,
now you have to get ads on top of that.
I you know, we've all these companies have just I know we're not talking about Roku anymore, but like the streaming services have just recreated cable too, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can stream whatever you want, whenever you want, ad free, and it's like, we're gonna put the ads back in and bundle it all back up together. We're back.
Yep. Yeah, Amazon is like suddenly there's ads now for Amazon Prime. You have to pay like it's like $3, but that's super annoying that all of a sudden it's like there's ads.
The Roku stuff is in particular. I mean, I wonder if they're gonna gear up for a fight with the game console manufacturers, right? Because it's like intruding in. You know, it's like the television, the display should be like a passive participant. You know, they're not involved in the content that it's displaying. It's just a display technology. Like, so I feel like it's sort of breaking the unspoken contract that they have with the consumer of like. You know, I wouldn't be happy if Microsoft was showing ads and pause screens either, but at least I feel like they're within their, that's like an OS level thing where it's kind of like their call to make, where it's like, you know, Roku, whoever owns the display, they don't have any right in, you know, they're well outside of the scope of what they should be doing.
Sure.
Yeah. It's almost like I shouldn't know if I want to watch Netflix, HBO, whatever, like I shouldn't be actively thinking about if I'm watching that on a Roku or a PS5 or an Amazon Fire Stick. I'm there. I bought the device to stream the app that I pay a subscription for. And so it's like, that's what you were originally supposed to be, was something to like, oh, you don't have a smart TV? Well, here's this instead. So now like you're becoming your own program. And I think Roku does have like a channel and stuff, but like you shouldn't have to subscribe to that to use Roku for other stuff. I agree, Justin. Damon, that's super weird.
Damon, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't like it.
You don't like this either?
I don't like it. I don't like it. Well, I do think the
that's
way
two.
That this,
this
will receive
this
traction.
It's really the secret. Well, my secret is that it's most things.
I think the extra nefarious part of this is I see that this being a feature that's implemented in some sort of subsidized 4K TV plan, right? Where it's like, hey, you can buy this 4K TV for $100, except it has advertisements built in. There's already, I forgot, there was a company that released
the Kindle.
a dual screen TV, essentially, that the bottom screen would always be playing an advertisement, but the top screen would be playing whatever you want. But the TV's free. So, like, there's families out there who, of course, like, yeah, we get a free TV, whatever. Yeah. I'll endorse
just
an ad.
Just put a black tape over them.
Yeah. But it's such just a nefarious way of C-suites worming their way into our homes.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Kindles were like $100, or you could get one for $40. But when it's idle, it shows advertisements.
But then you can call up Amazon support and be like, hey, I thought I bought the one that didn't show advertisements, but there's advertisements here. And then if you're lucky, you can get it waived. But
one day you'll be able to get an iPhone that's like half off, but it'll just display ads when it's idle.
I am curious.
Sir, we heard you discussing this scheme before you called us with your partner. We have that recording.
Of course they do. 100%.
So, I mean, this is just a patent to this point. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but it's unclear how it would work with gaming in the first place. Cause you know, most pause screens or whatever, well, not most, but a lot of them still have like music playing. Maybe there's some like an idle animation of your character. So I don't know how it would read that you're like
latency idle is probably going to be a nightmare too.
That's the other thing. Someone pointed out in the comments, like, how is it going to know when I unpause my game? If it takes even 0.1 millisecond longer than the game does to unpause, that's intrusive. And
I think you're
disruptive.
Bad at Stellar Blade now. Wait till they introduce 3 seconds of latency there.
Also, when you pause a game, sometimes you're still, you know, maybe you're looking at the map or you're...
What if it's a Dark Souls 5 and you can't actually pause the game because the game's still going on? So what if you're getting ganked by some dude invading your planet and then an advertisement for Wendy's pops up and now you're getting getting 1-2 punched by Wendy's and the random invader?
Well, if you die, you deserve a treat and a Frosty is a good option. that's all I'm going to say. My issue is sound. These ads better be silent because, like, when I pause something because I got a phone call or something, I can't be having, like, Carl's Jr. just screaming in my living room suddenly. Like,
dude,
I need a
reactive ad would be amazing. I was like, ooh, having a hard time. Maybe take a break real quick, buddy, and enjoy a nice, tasty beverage.
That's there's something there.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't let Per Schneider hear you. He's going to be like, IGN guides, having trouble with Dark Souls?
Yeah.
Head on over to...
Or like, if you get second place in Fortnite and as you're on your way back to your lobby, you get some consolation prize, which is free nuggets at, you know, McDonald's.
You're on the lava level, you fall into the lava.
Yeah.
Oh, it's feeling the heat there. How about a nice Coors Light?
Spicy.
It's so.
This is RoboCop. How RoboCop.
This sounds
happens.
Amazing.
I'd buy that for $1.
It sounds great. I want to see all the different versions of this now.
Yeah. We may have just completely talked ourselves into this.
We designed
into
our
this,
own
like, dystopian.
Every advertiser's like, "What? Write that down."
They're like, "Look, I hate this. Great. I've never been more angry about something." And it's like, "Wait a second, free Frosty, you say?"
One person mentioned Wendy's, and now is all I could think about.
Yeah, there is once in my life, I have a vivid memory in my 20s or whatever, and like there was a television commercial for a new Monster Cookie Blizzard, and like it was the only time in my life that like I turned off my TV and I got my car and I went to dinner. Like I gotta,
it's like the absolute best scenario for the advertiser.
Yeah.
Couldn't have gone any better.
Yeah, that's exactly. I love this idea, though, that, like, Justin's whole family sitting around just turns the TV off, stands up, just comes back with a blizzard.
His sleeper agent code.
Yeah, he's like, whoa, where am
there
I?
It is.
Oh, my God.
Did it look anything like Trump?
Justin,
what is that?
What is
the heck is this commercial?
Hold on, this rules.
Is that it might be the Monster Cookie Monster Cookie Blizzard? I don't know.
Okay.
That rules. I'd eat that too. I would have done the same thing Justin did if I saw this on my TV.
It's the only time in my life that I'm like, I'm going to go do that right now. Like, okay. say less.
I'm convinced.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Well, with that... That brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Joe in Brigantine, New Jersey. And he has a good idea. He says, the next Game Scoop will be released on my birthday, April 5th.
Ooh.
Can't think of a better gift to celebrate 41 than having my 20 question suggestion presented to the Omega Cops. Here is my top 10 favorite games list. I say you ask the panel to pick a number from 1 to 10. Choose your own demise.
Ooh.
So he's included his top 10 games here. You can pick the game. That's 1 out of 10.
I feel like we should pick number 1 or something, right? Like better sure. odds that like it's some incredible iconic game unless, yeah. you know.
That's strategy. We pick number 1.
1 is easy mode for sure. Like if we start to do like yeah. 6, that's where it's like, okay, this is going to get too tricky.
1 or maybe like 2 if 1 is like some weird, you know, something weird. I don't care. Actually.
Let's go with 1. We're swinging okay. for we'll the fences one. Here.
All right, you have selected Joe's number 1 favorite game of all time. Let also, the questioning begin.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy birthday, Joe.
You're watching
this. So Damon, you actually gave us, if we want to metagame it, you gave us a lot of clues because A, mm-hmm. we know it's his favorite game, mm-hmm. so yeah. it's not something bad, and we know that he's 41.
Mm. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Nostalgia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably. So, okay, did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No.
Oh, no, he's not a slave to nostalgia.
He's not my fair game of all time is Rise of the Ronin. Like, dang, all right. shoot, okay, let's see here. Not in the 90s, huh? Okay.
Is Mark's this game console exclusive?
No.
Joe is he's a man of the people. He's not a slave to any one corporation.
Can you play this game on the Nintendo Switch?
I don't think so, no.
I don't know.
That makes me think that it's...
Hello, I'd like to withdraw $1 million. I'm Mr. Burns.
Thank you.
What's your first name?
I can't believe you picked up what I was putting down.
I would have had zero idea. That was good.
It's been a while since I thought of that one.
Yeah.
That's good.
Mark, you had a train of thought going. You said because it's
yeah,
not
I can't.
On oh,
I was thinking... It's possible, like, if it's like, maybe it was that it's a semi more recent game, like if it had even a chance, but I guess that doesn't actually mean anything.
Was this game developed in Japan?
No.
All right. Is this game part of the previous generation? So it'd be PS4, Switch, and Xbox One.
No. And that's 5.
Oh, man.
Rude that you, I guess Switch is previous gen, but Nintendo's off doing their own thing now. I don't know.
They're their own gen.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I don't know.
Is this game on PlayStation 3, Xbox 360?
Yes.
Okay,
cool. I was like, it's either super recent or, all right.
Was this game made by EA, Activision, or Ubisoft?
No.
Oh, no.
And we know it's not like Halo, because...
Number
it's funny
one
that's
game.
that's a gen of the best games being exclusive to either PS3 or Xbox 360. So
is this an indie game?
No.
So hold on. So it's not made in Japan, but nor is it made by EA, Ubisoft, or Activision, which obviously leaves many, many developers.
Oh, it could and, be something and we like know it's Skyrim. Something like
yeah,
that.
Something like Skyrim or you know GTA. We also know it's Joe's favorite game. Happy birthday, Joe. Does this game prominently feature multiplayer?
No.
Okay, so that eliminates any kind of like, you know, like Call of Duty or FIFA or any of that's my favorite game.
Yeah.
Is your player avatar a humanoid?
Yes.
Okay.
That's 10.
Is this game first person?
Yes.
All right.
Could be Skyrim. Could be Skyrim.
Well, no, it's not Skyrim.
It could be,
it's not on
but
the Switch.
I feel like he would know it was on Switch, yeah.
No, like,
I
Skyrim
think without a doubt,
Switch.
People know that Skyrim's on Switch. That was my first thought, too.
Well, Damon researches it. He doesn't know it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, he's not going to... Oh, I forgot. Skyrim was released on the Switch.
Maybe I was giving him too much credit.
What? So first person... It's like Morrowind, though. No.
Yeah, I was going to say, it could be Oblivion, because Oblivion wouldn't be on Switch. But was Oblivion on PS3? I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
You know it's on
Do you remember?
Yeah, it was.
The halcyon days where Oblivion and Skyrim were only 5 years apart. Remember when video games were like
yeah.
that?
But
guys,
it's like
it's bad.
I'm gonna be honest. I didn't play a lot of games back then, but like I was still in high school. I guess a lot of people play games in high school. I don't even remember Oblivion being on Xbox 360. I know it's a OG Xbox game.
I know.
No. Your Morrowind is the OG Xbox game. Oblivion was one of the first games where I looked at it and I'm like, I cannot believe this game looks this good. It was unbelievable. That and Fight Night Round 3. Okay. Or Fight Night, whatever it was. Okay. So is this a game, a role-playing game?
Yes.
But not a Japanese role-playing game. So
it's Oblivion.
It might be Oblivion.
Is this a Bethesda software game?
Is this game made by Bethesda?
Oh, these are two different questions.
Oh, wait.
Oh, sorry. Bethesda Game Studios.
What? Okay. You're asking, was this game...
Maybe we should just change the question because maybe it's like Todd Howard involved in the game. Is Todd Howard a part of this game?
Yeah. Well, no. No.
Oh no.
Wait a second. I don't understand what just happened.
Me too. I'm kind of confused.
Yeah. Wait.
Well, because so Nick said Bethesda Softworks, but that's the publisher. But then so I said Bethesda Game Studios. But if he's saying no Todd Howard, then it's just not Bethesda Game Studios because he's been.
What
game
if
director.
It's like Fallout New Vegas?
Right, that's exactly...
It could be Fallout New Vegas. Okay, was this game made by Obsidian?
Yes.
That's New Vegas. There we go.
Does this game... Wait, how many questions do we have left?
Five.
Does this game take place in and around Las Vegas?
Yes.
Is it Fallout New Vegas?
Fallout New Vegas it is.
Yeah!
Yes. Hey!
Yeah, I just wasn't sure if at that time, did Bethesda own Obsidian? I don't think they did. They just hired Obsidian to
I don't
make this
think
game.
So. I think... Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like this game is going to have new... So the Fallout television show takes place in Los Angeles, and so it's taking Fallout lore back to the West Coast. And so New Vegas and the New California Republic and some of the stuff... I'm hopeful that some of the stuff in New Vegas is going to be relevant again to the lore.
They showed in the second trailer they dropped, they showed Shady Sands as a location in the show. So I'm like,
exactly.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Also, you guys should definitely replay Fallout 1 and 2 if you've never played it. Highly recommend. It still holds up.
Talking about games with like development time, this is like one of the fastest developed games of all time for like a game that has now like reached this like level of. I think they made this game in like 18 months or something like
really?
That.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, it did show it at launch. It was pretty busted, but like, but
it has
it
like gone on to become like a lot of people's, you know.
I miss the
favorite game of all time.
It's all this, well, happy birthday, Jim.
Yeah.
And I miss the New Vegasification of like you used to get games and then they would use that engine to fast follow with like a new sequel. And like we're just and like, you know, I understand the element of it being kind of lazy or like, you know, if it's this kind of game, it's not going to do anything super crazy from like a gameplay perspective. But it's like it also gives them a chance to refine the writing and the character work and some of that stuff. And then, you know, you end up with these gems.
It's tough because it's like it makes me go back to what we were talking about earlier when it comes to like how long are we gonna have to wait for Fallout 5, and so it's like Fallout 3 was great, but a lot of people think New Vegas is better, and I'm not saying like Obsidian versus I'm just saying like people another studio can make a really great Fallout game, so it's like they need to just like I have no problem with Fallout coming from another developer.
It's the idea, though, that they're building on a skeleton of something that already exists, like Justin was talking about. The framework is there.
Yeah.
And so you pull in a team with the writing chops like Obsidian has, and they're just going to apply their full pen and paper RPG rule set to whatever has been built ahead of them. So, like, I think that's an exciting opportunity for people to do, a Starfield colon whatever else. Like, why isn't that happening more? Like the tools are already there, and in theory it should be a lot more easy to work on an expansion and bring people in, but of course that gets into corporate acquisition stuff and contracts.
But the good news is Microsoft owns them both. Somebody get Phil on the phone. Maybe he's gonna be like, we never thought of that, guys.
get me Starfield and Pentiment, please. Starfield Pentiment collab when
Obsidian they're too busy now. But there's other studios that could do it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
They're working on Outer Worlds too.
Yeah.
In 2019, there was a change.org petition created to bring Fallout New Vegas to the Switch. It hasn't successfully has not brought the game to the Switch yet. Although I'm a little surprised it's not on the Switch.
I am actually.
How many people signed it?
1,200 people.
That's not okay. That many.
You're right. You are right.
It'll sell dozens of copies.
I do love New Vegas, but to this day, it's the only Fallout game I haven't completed because my choice at the end of the game glitched right before the battle at the Hoover Dam, and the game broke. I was trapped in a room, and to this day, I'm like, you know what?
That game gets really weird at the end. It kind of falls apart a little. It gets really weird.
It really needs to be modded and patched on PC for sure.
100%.
Would you like to hear Joe's full list of his 10 favorite games of all time?
Please, absolutely. It's his birthday. He's starting a birthday
at 10,
boy.
Starting at 10, counting down to 1. At 10, he's got Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, Mass Effect, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, Super Mario Bros. 2, Tears of the Kingdom, Final Fantasy VII, The Legend of Zelda. Then the top three are GTA 5, Mass Effect 2, and Fallout New Vegas.
Wow.
So he really is like of that age, because a lot of those were like 360 PS3 era type games.
But he's also got, you know, Super Mario Bros. 2, Punch-Out, and Legend of Zelda on there.
He's 41, you said?
41, you said.
Okay. 10 years older than
that
me.
That checks out.
His taste and our tastes aligned, my friend. You got good taste.
Yeah.
Thank you for the suggestion, Joe, and happy birthday. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for video game 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. This is a very fun show. I had a very good time with you all. Thank you, Nick, for joining me here in studio. Thank you to both Justin and Mark. And thank you to Jobert working behind the scenes to make this episode possible with all that delicious B-roll. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. There it is. I'm going to watch Freaking the Birdies tonight, even if I have to rent it for $5. We're out.
Damon, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't like it.
You didn't like
it? Oh, no.
You didn't like the show?
No, it was good. I also think I'm going to rent Weekend at Bernie's, though.
That's crazy.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God. And we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.